Blog Talk Radio.
The Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fears I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no one to save with the world in a grave. Take a look around you, boy. It's bound to scare you, boy. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. My blood's so mad, feels like coagulating. I'm sitting here just contemplating. I can't twist the truth, it knows no regulation. Handful of senators don't pass legislation, and marches alone can't bring integration. When human respect is disintegrating, this whole crazy world is just too frustrating. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Think of all the hate there is in Red China, then take a look around. Just tell me, Alabama, you may leave here for 4 days in space, but when you return, it's the same old place. The pounding of the drums, the pride and disgrace. You can bury your dead, but don't leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbor, but don't forget to take race. And tell me over and over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. No, no, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
Okay. James Bostic, a conservative's perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio, blogtalkradio.com. Wars and rumors of wars. And that's what we've been faced with over the last couple of weeks, with this very mysterious, very nebulous, very foggy situation in Ukraine. But perhaps, as we look at a few things tonight, perhaps it's not so nebulous. Perhaps it's not so foggy. Yes, Gary, do it. Do it. Absolutely. Just talking with my friend, my brother, my man, Gary Benford, host of United Patriots Uprising, smash million selling hit show that's on every platform on earth three times on Sundays. Everybody's out there listening to this guy. Everybody wants to be on his show. And I can honestly say I knew him when we were just talking about the song there with Barry McGuire, On the Eve of Destruction. Goes way back to about 1965, 1966. And, you know, what once was, well, he may be senile, but you'll never know till you check him out. Do it, man. Go check him out. That would be a good one. If he's on, it would be interesting to see his take on his song 50 years after the fact, if he's still around. But anyway, we were just talking about, and that's what we were talking about. And Gary said, you know, he was thinking about having Barry McGuire on his show. And that's when that popped up. I said, yes, yes, go ahead and do it. That would be great. What once was old is now new again. The lyrics in that song, timeless, and yet at the same time, contemporary. Okay. I'm not exactly sure how to start dismantling this, tearing into it, or whatever the hell we're going to do to it. But the story is this. And here's 2 weeks ago, Vladimir Putin, the Pootster, the big pooty poo, decided that he wanted to restore some of that USSR glory. He wanted to bring back some of the luster of the, you know, the Cold War 80s. And he invaded Ukraine. I got that one wrong. I didn't think he would. Again, I didn't think he had to. My thinking was that Joe is so weak and shaky and sketchy. You know, the guy, his administration collectively were afraid of their own shadow. And move troops here, move troops there. Accidentally send a squad of tanks over the border and then bring them back. Then talk about annexing or, you know, recognizing the secession or the subsequent independence of those eastern regions of Ukraine that are close to Russia. You know, I mean, he went for it. He went for it. There's a big problem, and no one wants to talk about it. No one wants to talk about it. Everybody has spoken in hushed tones the whole time about the vaunted Russian military and how great they are and how, you know, what a wily and tenacious foe they were during the Cold War. Why? Because they had a top of the line military. And they had a lot of crap. I mean, they had a lot of guys, they had a lot of tanks, they had a lot of shells, they had a lot of artillery pieces, they had a lot of jet airplanes. They had a lot of submarines. They had a lot of nuclear weapons. Then the Soviet Union falls apart. Poland, Czechoslovakia, Ukraine, Crimea, Berlin, you know, East Germany. All these areas fall away. Yugoslavia, they all fall away. And we're left with just Russia. Russia has a gross domestic product somewhat on par, maybe a little bit larger than Texas, the state of Texas. Do they still have a lot of nukes? Yeah, and I would say a large measure of them probably still work. They've probably been fairly well maintained. Do they still have delivery systems capable of putting those things on target? Absolutely they do. Sure they do. Do they have them in the scale that they had them when it was the Soviet Socialist Republic? I don't think so. I just don't think so. And yet, here closing in on almost 30 years after the breakup of the Soviet Union, we still speak in those hushed tones about what the Russians can do and how fierce they are. Okay. I'm not saying that we minimize or marginalize or misunderestimate, as George W. Bush would say, any of our opponents, our adversaries, and these guys are adversaries. Don't make any mistake about it. They are adversaries. Are they a threat on the magnitude of China? No, they're not. Again, like I said, they have a very small domestic, gross domestic product. But the problem is this, and here's why I say that. And the more I see what's going on here, the more I'm thinking I'm right. Now, I blew the call on going in. All right, I did. I blew that one. However, let's take a look. Everybody has been talking for the last 2 weeks about this fearsome, huge armored column that's 40 miles long, and it's about 15, 18 miles outside of Kiev. It's a horrible thing to see. It's got teeth. It's got treads. It's got bullets and antennas and squinty little orange lights that gleam and glare at you. And it's not going anywhere. It's been 15 to 18 miles outside of Kiev for almost 2 weeks. It has not moved. Ostensibly, when questions first arose about why the column wasn't moving, it was because of they needed to get these guys fed, so they were waiting to bring out food for the troops. America, the Russians have had hardened installations along the Russian-Ukrainian border since there's been a Russian-Ukrainian border. What's that mean? That means barracks. That means running water. That means mess kitchens. That means the equipment to have field kitchens ready to go. That means they have supplies. That means they have water. They have rations, combat rations. It takes 2 weeks to feed a 40-mile column? Were you feeding them one at a time? Something was just not right about this. And after today, and giving it some more thought, there's some more things that make sense about it. Now, here's where I'm going. You've got this column, this Russian military column. Ooh, it's 40 miles long. It's 40 damn miles long. Tanks, armored personnel vehicles, trucks, cars, fuel tanks, ambulances, equipment, half tracks, artillery, mobile mechanized artillery, everything. If it's got wheels and a gun, or it carries guns on wheels, or it has wheels to carry guns and guys with guns, it's in a column 40 miles long, 18 miles outside of Kiev. And it's been there for 2 weeks. Now, I'm going to move on to something I discovered this weekend. And we're going to couple that with some more information I'm going to give you. One of the Mojo 50 alumni and podcasting friends of mine is a delightful woman named Denise Simon. And Denise Simon is plugged into things the likes of which I simply cannot imagine. She's one of those kind of people that I really like a lot, because here's the deal. If she says, she doesn't say, you know, if she says it, you can hang your hat on it. And I came across, it was just in my feed, and came across it the other day. What in the world is going on here? Trying to black me out, man, but I'm not going to let it happen. You hear me? I'm not going to let it happen. Okay, here we go. Maybe, I don't know, shit. What in the world? Technology, making our lives easier. It listed some technology that I was unaware of. But anyway, I want you to take a listen to what's going on, according to people in the know. The Ukrainian military has been using an electric drone, and it's called the Punisher. Now, the Punisher is very, in this case, you could say is pretty mission specific. Here's what it targets. The Punisher drone has the capability to target fuel storage, ammunition supplies, and electronic warfare stations up to 30 miles behind the enemy lines. Let me say that again. These are drones, and the Ukrainian military has them, and they've been using them, that can target fuel storage, ammunition supplies, and electronic warfare stations up to 30 miles behind the enemy lines. Eugene Bulatsev, an engineer with the Ukrainian designer UA Dynamics, said that the electric drones were game-changing and had completed up to 60 successful missions since the invasion began. Now, one more time. These drones have the capability to target fuel storage, ammunition dumps, and electronic warfare stations up to 30 miles behind the enemy lines. I picked this up today from a place called Statista.com. And according to Statista.com and the numbers that I've looked in a couple of other places are on par. But let's get into this. Okay, we talked about the capabilities of the Punisher. At this point, as of today, the Russians have lost 11,000 troops, 999 armored personnel vehicles, 454 cars and trucks, 290 tanks, 117 artillery systems, 68 helicopters, 60 fuel tanks, 50 ground radar systems, 46 aircraft, 23 anti-aircraft warfare systems, 7 drones, and I would love to get the story on this, 3 light speedboats. I don't know, okay? We didn't lose that many guys in almost 20 years in Afghanistan. Now, the Germans invaded Ukraine the last week of February, so we're in like the third week of this. So within 3 weeks, if these numbers are verified, and like I said, I'm seeing enough averages close to these numbers to believe that we're probably ballparking it. We're probably in the ballpark. And I'm going to read that again. 11,000 troops, 999 armored personnel vehicles, 454 cars and trucks, 290 tanks, 117 artillery systems, 68 helicopters, 60 fuel tanks, 50 ground radar systems, 46 aircraft, they don't say what type, I'm guessing probably reconnaissance and fighter bombers, 23 anti-aircraft warfare systems, 7 drones, and of course the 3 Glastrons there. That's huge. 11,000 guys in 3 weeks. They must have walked into a buzzsaw. Now, keep your mind on the column. I want you to stay with the column now. We're still talking about that, a 40-mile column. So if these drones are what they say they are, and they've conducted 60 missions, successful missions, since the start of this war, no one will say this, and I don't understand why they won't. Maybe the Russian military, number one, isn't altogether that. Number two, maybe the people responsible for planning this mission did so in an atmosphere of self-confidence, supreme self-confidence, and conceit and arrogance. This column isn't going anywhere. Basically, I think, because it cannot go anywhere. That 40-mile stretch of road has bridges on it. These bridges have been blown up. Bridges in front, and it would be wise to expect that the bridges behind the column have been blown as well. I think it's also safe to assume that by now there are probably many, many vehicles within this column that have been disabled or destroyed. They're no longer usable. They're no longer serviceable. And these guys have got to find a way to get them off the roads, move them to repair centers, or just push them off to the side so that the column can advance. But the column can't advance. Why can't the column advance? Well, the bridges are blown. Okay. Yeah. Well, what if the bridges weren't blown? The column's still not advancing. Why? No fuel. I think that the planners of this mission, of this action, decided that Ukraine was going to be a pushover, that they weren't going to have the problems that they're having, that they weren't going to meet the resistance that they're meeting. Ukrainians are dying, and the Russians are shelling civilian targets, and that, well, they're targeting civilians because that's, you know, that's just what they're doing. And I would say in their mind, they probably see him as legitimate combatants because, you know, the Ukrainian government's handing out automatic weapons and training these people. They weren't just handing out rifles and ammunition willy-nilly off the back of a truck to anybody that wanted. These people were being trained in how to operate these weapons, how to fire them, care of them. Because these people are serious about fighting for their country. One of the major distillers in Ukraine stopped making booze and started making Molotov cocktails, using their bottles and the alcohol available to make Molotov cocktails. He's overreached. Even, well, as of today, I'm not exactly, it's going to go on for a little while. They're still going to buy oil. I think they're just paying lip service to this ban. They're just going to say they're banning, but they're going to find some circuitous or convoluted method of getting oil from Russia and getting U.S. Yankee greenback dollars to Russia. But there are other issues that tell me that this thing's going south. Now, and then we look at this, and if we take this at its face value, and we're going to say, let's take all this mess and let's discount it 15% across the board. That's still huge. Those losses are still huge for a three-week period. Are you guys hearing on the news fighting of that savagery, of that level of intensity? They're not talking about it, but it must be happening. They still have such tight control over the press in Russia that most of the people don't even know they're at war. And we have these stooges all over Washington, D.C., telling us, insisting that we need to be in a shooting war with Russia over these people. These guys are doing fine. Let's give them the lethal aid that they need to get the job done. Let's do that. But here's another problem, and this is very telling as well. Let's see if I can pull it up here. Two more Russian commanders have been killed in Ukraine. See, the problem is, when things get rough in combat, when a situation is precarious, when it could go either way, the field commanders have a duty. It is incumbent upon the commanders in the field to make their presence known. It has a number, you know, it accomplishes a number of things. It instills confidence in the men. It must not be that rough up here. The general's here. So we can tough it out. So it can instill resolve in the soldiers in an area where that resolve might be weakening. It might be dissolving, and maybe the line's getting ready to collapse. A divisional commander and a regimental commander died as a convoy of Russian tanks and other vehicles continued to struggle while heading for the capital city of Kiev. The announcement came a day after the revelation that a Ukrainian forces sniper killed Major General Andrei Sukhovetsky. Andrei Sukhovetsky. Usually I can hit those right on the first try, but every now and then I foul tip. Andrei Sukhovetsky was the deputy commander of the Combined Arms Army in the Central Military District. He was an appointee of Vladimir Putin. These commanders have been killed because they had to go further and closer to the front. Again, there was a reason why those guys had to go there. There was a problem, and the line may have been in jeopardy of dissolving. A weak point, it turns into a rout. It is said, and it's not surprising, that Russia is underreporting casualties in the war. I'm not exactly sure at this point what's going to happen. Because, and here's the reason I say this. We speak in whispered tones in awe of this vaunted Russian military. The last time these guys were in a military action was almost 40 years ago in Afghanistan. And they got their clocks cleaned worse than we did in the 20 years they were there. What have they done? What have they done since then? We've had plenty of practice, man. We had Gulf War I. We had Gulf War II. We had the occupation of Iraq and Afghanistan. We've had some military readiness in the last 20 years. These guys haven't. Yes, they go on maneuvers. Yes, they go on war games. Yes, they're in a constant state of readiness. But the problem is, I think, that level of readiness is no longer what it was during the time of the Cold War. I think, again, there's been an overreach here. So what you have now, in effect, is a 40-mile-long traffic jam. You got road work up ahead. You got road work behind. And in the meantime, who knows what those drones are doing? And if they've taken out 60 ground radar installations, and I'm sure there's probably been a certain level of resupply, or there's been, but then again, I'm not so sure that he can resupply. I was talking with a friend of mine, Kevin White, the other day, we were talking about just this thing. If these drones are as effective as they say, if they live up to their capabilities are what we've been told they are. It's entirely possible that he can even get them back. He may not be able to resupply them to get them back. And I've just been reliably informed by a former Air Force aircraft mechanic, fighter jet mechanic, my pal Kevin White, their aircraft are subpar. And I would say probably, Kevin, at this stage in the game, Maybe their maintenance procedures are probably leaving a little bit to be desired too. At any rate, they're not going anywhere. And I really don't think that they can go anywhere. If these bridges have been destroyed, blocking them out of Kiev, then they're going to have bridging equipment brought in. And unless they fly in choppers, and I'm sure that those drones would probably see it, and they could probably target an air target just like they can a ground target. I don't know what's going to happen. They got to bring that bridging equipment up to where the bridges are out. And if you got a 40-mile long traffic jam, how do you do that? How do you do it? I guess you could bring it down on the river, but then it's just as, you know, that equipment being exposed as a target, it's just as open there as it would be anywhere else. I don't know what's going to happen here. I think he's kind of caught. I'm not saying that the Ukrainians can get out of this easily. There's been a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of civilian casualties, a lot of civilian fatalities. Because now that he can't do anything else, apparently he is unable to attack any, you know, legitimate military targets because this column is frozen up. He's shelling civilians indiscriminately even after agreeing to a ceasefire. And if Ukrainian sharpshooters can get that close to where they can take out a general officer, I would say some of these Russian fellows are probably pretty damn nervous. They can't go anywhere. They can't retreat. They can't advance. I would imagine the weather this time of year in that part of the country, it's even more winter than we have here. That could mean lots of mud. It's just going to be tough. I never could understand why it was taking so long. This is something, you know, an operation like this, it would seem to me, you get in there as quick as you can. You take out the necessary targets that you need to take out in order to successfully affect the invasion and the occupation, and you establish those things immediately. We're 3 weeks into this, and he's still 18 miles out of town, and he can't go anywhere. Stuck. He knows he's stuck. He's pissed off about it, and he's decided that he's going to go ahead and be a dick and attack civilians. Because he overreached, because he planned poorly. Take a quick break, and we will be back with more of a conservative perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio right after this. Let me just slide on down through here, man, and see what we got to listen to. I do this all the time. Here we go. Back right after this. We'll be right back. Say what? Okay, I'm back. I got caught up in some stuff there. Yes, that is still on my wall, man. I've got that album. I have it in vinyl, my man. That was the Average White Band. Pick up the pieces. We're back. It is a conservative's perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio Network. And we're on Blog Talk. We do it live, definitely on Tuesdays for a little while. Usually starts at 7, 9, and then Thursdays. But here lately, it's been every other Thursday because I've been involved in this class. I'm studying to take some certification tests for a teaching gig I got lined up. And we meet every other Thursday, which kind of throws me out of my 1 hour there back-to-back with the handsome one, El Guapo, Mark Hoffman. So that's only going to be on. Hold on just a second, man. I got to hit the mute button and expectorate. Hold on. And we're back. Okay. My. I don't think, I was just talking with one of my friends who I am so happy to see back in the world. She was the original producer for this show way back when, and then life took over, and she went on to go do other things, and she has resurfaced now. But I'm just talking to her a little bit about what's going on. This is not an honest country, Ukraine, and how it's being painted. It was this new government, basically, that got Hunter Biden's checks canceled at Burisma. So Joe's pissed off at these guys. But that doesn't mean that they're a totally honest country. But you know what? Neither are we. But here's the deal. Ukraine has been important to the Ukraine has been important to the State Department and to our intelligence community, specifically the CIA, because there's a lot of foreign aid money laundering that goes back and forth here on this. And we're not going to get into that part of it, but it happens. It's there. Businessmen and oligarchs in Ukraine, just as they have oligarchs in Russia and Georgia and Crimea, you know, the oligarchs there strike up friendships through the State Department and the embassy. And then these guys talk with congressmen and senators and, you know, they buy them off so that they can get more foreign aid. So there's a kickback going on. Okay. There's a kickback going on. So this foreign aid money that gets sent to Ukraine to help them become, to help them develop as a nation. Well, you know what happens with it. These congressmen that vote for these bills and these appropriations get a kickback on it, or they get plugged into sweetheart deals, just like Hunter Biden did, just like Big Joey did. Well, Joey didn't get plugged into the deals, but Joey got his cut. The big guy got his cut. So there's a lot of money at stake in Ukraine. So that's why everybody, you know, the United States is, oh, we got to get into war with Russia. No, we don't. No, we don't. They have to because, you know, Russia takes over Ukraine, then all the kickbacks from that foreign aid money is going to dry up. But when I speak to this issue, what I was looking at it from, the perspective that I've been looking at it from, and you know, okay, you know, we want to look down our nose at how corrupt the Ukrainian government is. Have you looked in D.C. lately? Have you guys been paying attention when I've been reading to you excerpts from Caught Red, from Red-Handed, from Clinton Cash, from Secret Empires? Hell yeah, the Ukrainians are dirty. So are we. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, there's no sense in being, you know, I'm trying not to be cynical about it. And the only thing I can say is that, yeah, corruption and all, even with that, even with all our sins and all our warts, it's not a totalitarian government. Is it corrupt? Yeah. So's ours. Hell, we're probably more totalitarian than the Ukrainians. But the bottom line is that column's not going anywhere. It can't go anywhere now. Maybe it was never supposed to go anywhere. Maybe it was just supposed to go this far. Maybe that was as far as the Ukrainians and the State Department and the CIA decided it was going to go. Okay. But needless to say, this should go a long way towards changing our perceptions of Russia being the same thing as the Soviet Union. It ain't. Was it the keystone? Yes, 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 yes. But there's no Poland. There's no Czechoslovakia. There's no Yugoslavia. You know, the Balkans are gone. There's no Crimea. There's no Ukraine. There's no Georgia. Not dead air. I'm just sitting here thinking about this. So Putin is caught. I think that he can't get out of there now. And I don't know how this is. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how this is going to work, because the Soviet Navy is sortied out on the southern coast of Ukraine. But I'm not anticipating any amphibious assault. But they could shell strategic targets, and they could launch missiles at targets off the Ukrainian coast. And I think what's going to happen, and again, all this stuff that we're talking about, this is not what the news beaks are going to tell us. And I don't know why. It's convenient for the Biden administration, obviously, because they can attempt, and some people will buy it. Some people will buy that, you know, gas prices so high is because Ukraine was invaded by Russia, and that destabilized the markets and shot the price up. Well, okay, but for the last year, we've been doing without any new oil discovery here in the United States. We've been buying from our enemies. We've been buying from the Saudis. We've been buying from OPEC. We've been buying from Russia. $70 million a day. I don't know if that stopped today or not. You never can tell about these cats. It might have. It might not have. Will we see boots on the ground in Ukraine? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't know. American sentiment, the public sentiment on this thing isn't really going to matter. I mean, if the people who are running Joe Biden decide that they want to see an American presence physically in Ukraine, then they'll send guys there. It won't matter how bad we piss and moan about or whether or not we think it's a good idea. If that's what they want to do, that's what they're going to do. I hope they don't. You know, digging into this thing today, and piecing together the things I've told you that I've just kind of like happened upon over the last couple days. Why would Joe Biden not? Let me think of a better way to phrase this. Why would Joe Biden's handlers be so hot to push a war with Russia over Ukraine? Well, there's a lot of reasons. His poll numbers are in the tank. Our economy is in the tank. Our national security is in the tank. Our society. And what I'm talking about here is that intercourse between Americans, getting along. And we live in a very polarized time, thanks to the people that are in the White House calling the shots now. And it's very, very difficult to keep from insulating yourself as an individual, staying with your tribe, okay? Because in times of stress, in times of turmoil, in times of uncertainty, what do we want to do? We want to gather about those people like us, your tribe, your family. And we have become very, very tribal on a lot of things. And a lot of this has to do with the fact that the left has been so effective in fomenting division through the concept of identity politics. Everybody's got an identity, man. We've all got identities, you know. The gay people have an identity. The Latinos have an identity. The black people have an identity. The Asians have an identity. Doesn't matter. Everybody's got an identity. And they pigeonhole people through this. Okay, let's take a look at the gay people, the black people, the Latinx, which even Latino people don't even like Latinx. They don't want to be called that. Some white liberal jackwad came up with that and inflicted it on these poor people. They don't like it at all. But anyway, let's get back to that. The Rainbow Coalition, you know, because there's all kinds of people, and there's not just gays. There's gays, there's bis, there's transsexuals, there's cisgender. I mean, there's all these crazy things going on in that compartment because it's been splintered into subgroups. But let's forget all about it. Let's just say we're not Latino Americans. We're not Asian Americans. We're not African Americans. We're not Spanish. We're Americans. Okay? We're here. We live in this country. We're citizens. We are Americans. Well, what do Americans want? Do they all want the same things? I think in large measure, yeah. They want security. I think most Americans want to be able to provide for themselves and for their families. I think most Americans want to live in peace. I think most Americans want to hang out with who they want to hang out. They want to bang who they want to bang. They want to marry who they want to marry. They want to provide for their families. They want to be left the hell alone. They want to be able to go to a park and not be hassled. They want to be able to go to the park and see that it's nice and clean and not littered with poop and syringes and prostitutes. And mentally ill people who aren't getting the care that they need, as well as the rampant criminal element that we see in every Democrat-controlled enclave in this country. You're sick, you want to go to a doctor and get decent health care that's not going to break you. You don't want to be paying $7.50 a gallon for gas. Those are pretty generic things. I think pretty solid garden variety, middle of the road stuff. And I think there are a lot more Americans that are like that, that want to be identified as that, than we have these leftist progressive Marxists identifying them through identity politics. And then in the end, eventually, you know, these people are going to be smart enough to realize that Democrats pander to identity groups the same way they pander to everybody else. They're going to tell the LGBT, BBQ, ADHD, TV types everything that they want to hear, that they rank first, that they merit any entitlements above everybody else. And you know what? That's the same thing they're saying to the Latinos. Same thing they're saying to the blacks. Same thing they're saying to the Asians. Same thing they're saying to everybody that they're trying to fleece a vote out of. I don't think anybody can disagree that we are in need, again, of a very, very serious course correction. And I don't know how much longer this country can survive one step forward and two steps back. And honest, sometimes I'm not exactly sure there are enough of us to lift that load. I don't know if there are enough of us left to hit that beach and make a difference. Now, don't get me wrong. That's not going to keep me from trying. And it's not going to keep any of the other people that I know from trying. It's not going to keep Gary Benford from trying, from doing his thing. It's not going to keep Hoffman from doing his thing. And sure and hell not going to stop me. It never has. It won't. But if we don't stand, and if we don't stand together really soon and find that spot where we say, this far, no further, the opportunity is slipping by. It is slipping away from us. Top of the hour, another quick musical break, and we will be back with the conclusion of Conservative's Perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio Network.
Yeah!
throwback for you. Elton John, Benny and the Jets here. James Bostic on A Conservative Perspective, Patriot Nation Radio here at Blog Talk Radio. Doing it live Tuesdays and every other Thursday. Tuesday 7 to 8:30, 9, just depends on when I run out of gas. And Thursdays 7 to 8. And then 8 to 9 is, of course, Mark Hoffman, Patriot Nation Radio Live. Patriot Nation Radio Live. Yeah, that's what it is. Okay. And, of course, Wednesday nights, Kevin White and the United Allegiance program. Man, that's some great American Allegiance program. I'm sorry. And everybody's got killer guests. Everybody's doing great work. And, you know, for just four guys, I'm going to count Gary. He went on to superstardom earlier in the year, and I can't be happier or prouder. You know, we just decided we had something to say, and we had this tremendous medium, this tremendous opportunity to get out here and do it. We did. We did. And it turned out to be something amazing. Well, if we take stock of the situation, we're in a tight spot, guys. We really are. We are in a massively tight spot. You know, things at home suck. They straight up suck. And I guarantee you that Antifa and BLM are just waiting. They're just waiting in the wings to act when they're called upon. Oh, by the way, while I'm talking about I forgot what I was going to say. Anthony Fauci. Anybody seen Anthony Fauci lately? No. How do you know the pandemic's over? You don't see Anthony Fauci anymore. Homeboy didn't even get a shout out on the State of the Union last week. Nothing. Zero. Zip. Persona non grata. I would say probably before summertime we'll hear about Dr. Fauci's impending retirement. And coming up in about 2 weeks, what is this? This is the 8th? Yeah, this is the 8th. Here in about 2 weeks, we're going to have an anniversary. Not a good one. Not a good one. I think it's about 2 weeks. Let me see here. Hold on. Pull this baby up. There it is. Okay. March 25th, as a matter of fact. March 25th will be the second anniversary. I have here a memorandum from the New York Department of Health. The Honorable Andrew M. Cuomo, Governor. Howard A. Zucker, MD, and JD as Commissioner. Sally Dreslin, Master of Science, Registered Nurse, as executive also ran. March 25th, 2020, two nursing home administrators, directors of nursing and hospital discharge planners. This is an advisory. Hospital discharges and admissions to nursing homes. It has been detected, COVID-19 has been detected, multiple communities throughout New York State. An urgent need to expand the hospital capacity in New York State to be able to meet the demand for patients with COVID-19 requiring acute care. As a result, this directive is being issued to clarify expectations for nursing homes receiving residents returning from hospitalization and for nursing homes accepting new admissions. They want to make sure that the hospital discharge planning staff and the nursing home staffs carefully review this guidance with all the staff members directly involved in resident admission, transfer, or discharge. and here's what they wanted them to do. All nursing homes must comply with the expedited receipt of residents returning from hospitals to nursing homes. Residents are deemed appropriate for return to a nursing home upon determination by a hospital physician or designee that the resident is medically stable for return. Designee could be anybody from a nurse to Mabel down in laundry, whoever's designated. Hospital discharge planners must, and this is in bold black letters, must confirm to the nursing home by telephone that the resident is medically stable for discharge. Comprehensive discharge instructions must be provided by the hospital prior to the transport. No, and this is underlined, no resident shall be denied readmission or admission to a nursing home solely based on a confirmed or suspected diagnosis of COVID-19. Nursing homes are prohibited from requiring requiring a hospitalized resident who was determined medically stable to be tested for COVID-19 prior to admission or readmission. You have to take them back. Yeah, you have to take them back. No, you don't get to ask them whether or not they're COVID positive. We'll tell you. And guess what? 16,000 people died in New York, maybe more, maybe more. 16,000 grandmothers, 16,000 grandfathers, aunts, uncles, cousins, older brothers, younger brothers, sisters, moms, and dads. 16,000 of them at least, and Governor Cuomo killed them. The most vulnerable, the most at-risk population during the whole COVID thing was what? People with high comorbidities and who? The elderly. Who do you find in nursing homes? Well, you find the elderly, but not always just the elderly. There are a lot of people that have, you know, very, very, you know, demanding medical needs. And they have to live there, and they're not elderly. They could be young people. Having a brief tenure there in the nursing home business, they're not just the elderly, but they're all at risk, either through their age or through high comorbidities. And a lot of those elderly folks in those nursing homes had both, and they never stood a chance. And they died alone without their families because families weren't allowed to go in. They weren't allowed to have funerals either. And it wasn't just New York. It was New Jersey. It was Pennsylvania. It was Ohio. It was Michigan. It was Colorado. It was California. It was Virginia. It was Massachusetts. And what drove Cuomo out of office? Grabbing the wrong titty. He got a hold of the wrong ass cheek, and that got him out. Never mind that he killed over 16,000 people, probably more than 16,000 people. Never mind that he killed them. He was responsible for that because that crap went out over his signature and his health board director's signature, and that nurse also ran, whoever she was. But that went out over his signature. And in my mind, he is just as much responsible for their deaths as if he walked in that nursing home and put a pillow over their face. How many Thanksgivings did he cheat the family members of those 16,000 people out of? How many Christmases? Maybe not many, maybe none in some cases, but I'll bet there were some that there were. They got cheated out of Halloweens. They got cheated out of football games, out of Sunday dinners, out of visitations with grandchildren. They cheated out of their lives, and nothing's going to happen to him. Nothing's going to happen to him for killing those 16,000 people. Nothing's going to happen to him for squeezing the wrong titty either. Nothing. No charges are going to be no criminal charges are going to be pressed against him. There's nothing to preclude him from running for public office again. And you know what? Some bitch probably get elected. We'll be talking about that here in a couple of weeks. I've got a few weeks to stew on that, and I will. But in the meantime, guys, what do we do? What can we do? We can be strong, yeah. We can make ourselves heard, yeah. And we're going to have to start being really damned effective at it. Up until this point, I mean, yeah, it's okay. But we're not hitting hard enough. And there's not enough of us hitting. We got to change that. But these people, in the media, in news, in government, they don't really want us shouting too loud. Look at what happened in Canada with a freedom convoy. Those guys went to Ottawa, and what did Trudeau do? He ran away. Think about that. He ran away. Yeah. COVID, got to be isolated because we care about our fellow Canadians, and I sure don't want to give them any COVID cooties. So I'm going to hunker down here in this basement surrounded by 5,000 Royal Canadian Mounted Police. You know, what if curses, it's do-ride. So yeah, he ran away, people. We got a freedom convoy moving towards D.C. It's on the Beltway now. It's in Maryland, I think. Probably closing in. Now, Joe's not going to run away, but he'll bunker out, man. He'll bunker out, and they'll probably call in Starfleet or somebody thinking that, you know, this is going to be the greatest invasion since Normandy. And try and make, you know, or at least since January 6th. I thought, and this just goes to show how wrong I am. I didn't think Putin was going to invade Ukraine either. But I thought at the end of the Obama hostage crisis, when we were held hostage by those guys for 8 years, I thought that it would never get that bad. I thought that we would never allow something like that to happen again. You know? It's a very, very slight comparison, and I don't mean to minimize what the Jews underwent with the Nazis, but the same kind of thing. The Jews, after the Second World War, the Jews said, no, never again. We are not going to let this happen to us again. Our people will never go through this again. And from that facet of it, from that perspective of it, that's where the American citizen has to be now. And I didn't think we would be, but hell, here we are, man. And in a lot of ways, it's worse. Somewhere in his sulfur pit, Barack Obama's throwing back his red silk cape and rubbing his hands together with glee, laughing about what's going on. He's delighted. Every Democrat, every Marxist, progressive, leftist nutbag out there is tickled to death. Every academic in the United States in our college and university system practically is in love with what's going on and what this country's suffering through right now. I wonder if anybody, just curious, I wonder if anybody's done a study or a head count of how many conservative professors are tenured in political science departments in colleges and universities across this country. There was one guy down in UNC. He was a contributor for Town Hall. I can't remember his name now, and I'm ashamed of it, but they treated him badly, and they tried to short him on his time and his tenure, and they suspended him, and they tried to blackball him and keep him from making a living, and he sued them, and he won, and after all that, One Sunday morning in his home in North Carolina, he put a pistol to his head and he pulled the trigger because they had beaten him down that badly. Even after he won, pay him, they had to reinstate him. But they stopped at nothing to strip the man down. They didn't care that they were taking everything from him. And I'll tell you something else, America. They're not going to give a rat's ass when they take everything from you. Look what they did to Mike Flynn. Look what they did to General Flynn. Look what they did to Roger Stone. Not dead air, just thinking about it. Time's running out. I'm not pushing the panic button. I'm not getting jacked up, and I'm not telling you to either. But time's running out. We can't leave this to the other guy to do the lift. We can't let somebody else do the work. We all have to dig in. We all have to stand shoulder to shoulder. We have to look at them and we have to say, nah, this is it. We're not going any further than this. As a matter of fact, you're going to turn around and we're going the other way. There are so many more of us than there are of them. But they have the media. They have print. They have social media. They have the internet. They have movies. They have newspapers. They have TV. They have magazines. They have TikTok. Andrew Breitbart showed us how to fight back online. He showed us and taught us how to engage. That's where we're going to win. And you know what? I'll tell you something, honest to God, and I talked about this maybe last Tuesday or maybe the Sunday before last. How many of you guys talk to your neighbors regularly? Not about politics. I'm just talk to your neighbors. Hey, what's going on? Yeah, your yard looks good. Boy, the grass was thick this year. I had to mow mine twice. It's simple things, okay? You can get more, and I think we can get more accomplished in this country on a one-to-one basis or a household-to-household basis with a hot dog and a root beer or a cold beer than we can with a bunch of left-wing or right-wing political sniping at one another. Because if it's a good hot dog and the beer's cold enough, you're going to hang around and you're going to talk. And maybe you don't talk about politics, okay? Maybe you don't. Or maybe you do. And if you do, maybe you can do it civilly and you can have things set up to maybe go get a hot dog and a beer at his place next Saturday or over at their place. Have the little woman make one of those million-dollar pies like she does every summer. People go crazy over that. I think we can get more done. And it's not an easy thing to do because everybody's got lives. We're going here. We're going there. You got kids. You got practices. You got dogs. You got a walk. You got boyfriends and girlfriends. You got life, man. You got life. Maybe you got two jobs. Maybe you can't go any damn where because gas is so high. So you're forced to deal with your neighbors. You can't go across town to your homie's house. You got to talk with this cat over here. And it turns out he's an okay guy. We don't see eye to eye on everything, but overall, I don't think I'm going to have any problems out of him, and he's sure not going to get any trouble from me. That's how it works. But see, social media, places like Twitter and Facebook and whatever, people have this, they've become seduced by this anonymity. And they think, and you couple that with someone who's convinced of the rightness of his thinking to the detriment of everybody else, and he's the only guy that's right. They would say things to one another online they would never dream of saying in person. What do? We keep on trucking, man. I was born in the 70s. That's what we do. We keep on keeping on, babe. And it's something, and really seriously, it is something to think about. And honest to God, I do believe we can get, you know, we can get farther with our neighbors in getting along and coming to some kind of a commonality, staying away from politics. Well, we got about 3 minutes out, and I think personally, oh my God, I'm yawning. Been a long day. Thank you very much for the opportunity to hang out and spend some time with you talking about all this stuff. You know, sometimes we get a little weedy here on ACP. I know that. And I understand that can get kind of dry and that can get kind of dull. But here's the thing, people. They don't want us following them into the weeds. They're counting on us getting tired and wearing out and saying, okay, whatever, fine, and not go, but we got to get in there after them. It's the only way we can get to the truth. It's the only way we can find out what we're doing. And we got to be careful. You get into the weeds, you know, at some point we're going to stumble up upon an entire den of serpents, and we're going to have to be ready. But we have to go. We have to get to the truth, and the truth is in the weeds, just past that den of serpents. And that's all there is to it. Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, you should be. The very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio. We're there Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with a recorded hour-long version of the program. Thank you, Penelope. I have 90 seconds left. And again, as I said, Tuesdays and Thursdays. Wednesday, also, the American Allegiance program with our pal Kevin White, outstanding guest, an outstanding radio man in his own right. Michael Cutler on Friday's blog talk, the Michael Cutler Hour, and, of course, Gary Binford and the United Patriots Uprising radio program. You can find it out there on all the platforms. That's it. God bless you. God bless America. We'll be back next time taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. In the meantime, take good care of yourselves, and we'll see you soon.